Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Celebrate Earth Day, every day. Celebrate Earth Day, every day. Celebrate land and sea. Celebrate you and me. Celebrate Earth Day.
Mr. John Denver on Earth Day, and it is Earth Day on this little planet of ours all day, every day. I just wanted to listen back to that song. I love Mr. Denver, as you know, and it's so appropriate for the day that's in it. Welcome to Late Lunch this Monday afternoon at the start of a brand new week. And let's begin the week by talking about Earth Day. And I'm delighted to welcome back to the show the founder and CEO of NGO Development Perspectives, Bobby McCormick. Bobby, good to see you again.
Great to be here, Gerry, and thank you for that wonderful tune.
Ah, it's great, isn't it? It is. Everyone should listen to that song today and take it on board. Bobby, I was thinking about today and what it's all about. Anyway, tell the listeners, what is the purpose of this day, Bobby?
I mean, I think primarily it's to celebrate the fact that we have this wonderful thing that we all share, planet Earth, and what a wonderful, cherished treasure it is, or is it? And that's really what the day is for. You know, do we recognise it enough? Should it only be one day a year that we really reflect on how important it is? It's been on the go since 1970.
John Denver says celebrate it every day, and I think he's absolutely right. Which you come in here, I just jotted these down and I'll throw them at you and to our listeners as well, because you're right what you say. You know, do we really value this little planet that we live on? And I was just thinking about, well, starting off at the top, climate change, deforestation, water shortages, air pollution, famine, war, depletion of natural resources, the soil and its health, poverty, extreme poverty versus unbelievable wealth, the access to education, shelter, a house, a roof over our heads, nuclear Armageddon, and living for today and not thinking about tomorrow or the generations ahead. Bobby, I think I'm just totally depressed when I read that list.
The list is long, Gerry, you know, and if we focus on that list, absolutely, we will be rightly concerned and much more. For many a year, these issues have been getting worse and worse. And I suppose it's our collective responsibility to try to reverse that trend.
But is there a commitment? You know, today all over the world, people like you, and I appreciate it, and there are many listening to us today, will do the little bits. You know, I saw somebody saying today, if you only get a bag and go down your road and pick up some litter, you're contributing, you're doing something this very day. But do the people who run the show round this planet and the various countries there are, do they care about this?
I think, sadly, we have a real problem when it comes to leadership globally. And I think most of those issues that you just read out, Gerry, are perpetuated by the leaders that we have. They're not in any way really alleviated. And that's very sad. Some of the smaller countries around the world are doing a good job. And I would say that Ireland in the round is doing a much better job than most at most of those issues. That being said, we are contributing as a country to many of those problems as well.
You mentioned, you know, the leaders in the world. Most of the leaders are men. I remember Louise saying this to me a while ago. If you think about the world, most of the leaders are men, and conflicts are driven by men, and that is as well. Is it a male thing?
I think we've got a real problem when it comes to not just violence, but other forms of destruction and extractivism and the linkage between that and gender. The Sustainable Development Goal framework is a wonderful framework, and goal 5 of that is gender equality. And it's not just about equality for sexes and genders. It's much more as well realising that there is a part to this that is around conflict, and I suppose the gender dynamic to that should not be underplayed. We know in countries around the world, the likes of Rwanda, that when you have something like a genocide, one of the best ways of dealing with that is to have much more gender balance. They're much more peaceful societies. We know that evidentially. So we should strive for that much more. I wouldn't overemphasize it though. I would say it's a really big issue to tackle. But there are other dynamics at play, like power. So Ursula von der Leyen is a good example of somebody who I would say has been a disastrous influence on the European Union over the last number of years. So does her sex or gender come into it?
Yeah, that's a fair point as well. But in the round, in the main, a more balanced
absolutely
world with more women having an input into yeah it would make a huge difference.
Historically, let's look at, like, even just in your mind's eye, think of those who've been involved in serious war and conflict. What have they got in common?
The other thing, Bobby, is, you know, this drive for never-ending growth and profits to be driven year on year upwards by major corporations, conglomerates. Isn't that contributing to an awful lot of the ills of the world?
It's not just contributing, it's the reason. And that goes back to your earlier point, Jerry, about the individual making actions. I think so many NGOs, so many people, so many organizations have for too long, you know, really looked at that, and that's a huge part of the puzzle, but not if we don't address the systemic and the structural nature of all of those problems. And what they've got at their core is this endless desire for economic growth at everything else's cost. And that has been an unmitigated disaster, really, since the 1980s, since we've had kind of Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, and neoliberal economics. That has really kind of just put fast forward the damage that we're doing to planet Earth. And really, that needs to be really looked at. We can't shy away from the evidence that backs that up. That is the root cause of many of the issues that you listed out earlier on.
Values. That's what it comes down to, really, the values, doesn't it, that we all should have, you know what I mean? And there are values that do this, drive everything to extract maximum out of everything. Is it the value system that really is in question here?
Values are a huge underplaying part of it. If you think of an iceberg and you think of what's above the waterline is what you see, that's the human behaviour. What's underneath it is the values that gives rise to that. So culturally, we need to look at the values that we deem to be important. Costa Rica years ago stood down its national army, and within months of that action being taken, they had lots more marine parks, they had lots more kind of, you know, environmental awareness. So we really need to look at what are our priorities. And I don't mean that just in Drogheda or County Louth or Ireland, but globally, what isn't important to us? And I think on Earth Day, we need to really reflect on the fact that we are part of nature. We're not separate to it. It's not there for our use. And sometimes humans use planet Earth as if it's just a resource, a tap, something to use when we want, something to do something with, but not really to see ourselves as part of this really complex web of relationships.
Do we not understand that resources are finite? That's another question that often I think of. You know what I mean? They're not infinite.
Yeah, absolutely. But our model of economic growth doesn't take that into consideration. And we've got a driving force of people that continue to believe the myth that we're going to build infinite growth on finite resources. Children understand that that's a fable, that's a myth, it's a story. And that story needs to be deconstructed, and we need a new story. A story that's valuing the earth, seeing ourselves as flourishing with everything else on this planet. And when you look around the solar system or systems, you know, it's a real jewel, and it's something that we maybe take for granted far too often.
On this day, you know, people are listening and think, what can I often ask people this, and I'll throw it to you again, and it's a big question. What can we do as individuals? What can we do if we, you know, if we're animated by this and we feel we want to make a change? How?
Yeah, we can make massive changes, but I think we need to realise that maybe the change is maybe sometimes political. And I don't mean that party political, but I brought down a few stats before I kind of go further. And one, I have a question as well for your listeners later on. But when you look at, let's say, tree cover in Ireland and Europe, you know, on average in the European Union, 35% tree cover. In Ireland, it's 11. You know, but then you look at Louth and Meath, and Louth is 2.9 and Meath is 5.9. So it's even far less than the Irish average, which is far less than the European average. So trees, we can plant far more trees. And that's something that should be encouraged at local authority level. What can we do about that? Maybe begin to ask the councillors and those that are seeking election, knocking on doors at the moment, what are their plans for biodiversity? What are their plans for water? The Boyne is one of the worst polluted rivers in the country. We've got the Hebble Sand that's less than a kilometre away from here. It's a rust bucket dying in the river. So do we value nature really? Does our local authority really think these things are important? I'm not so sure.
I saw the bloody ship myself the weekend. I was downtown. I'm not downtown a lot. And I just looked at it again. And I remember the furore that was about it, furore about it last year. And there has been for many subsequent years. And your headquarters is nearby there. There's not a sign of anything happening that, is there?
I think it's symbolic of a demise, really, of this wonderful town. I mean, I think it's staring us right in the face that there's certain things that's happening, certain dynamics at play, and we do, as Greta Thunberg says, we do blah, blah, blah.
I have to say, there's a question from a listener. If you want to put a question or comment on this day, Earth Day, 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text, would you please ask Bobby Jerry why our government allows the vast amount of data centres in this country who consume unbelievable amounts of energy to operate?
Yeah, it's an unbelievably important question. I don't know why they do. It not only do they suck up far too much energy that's not coming from renewable sources, but also the huge amount of water that they use. Ireland is an outlier in terms of the number of data centres that we have. Now, in fairness, in the last couple of years, far fewer planning permissions have been given for new data centres. So at least there seems to be a realisation that they need to be stalled. But of course, there's a lobby group that would say, no, that needs to continue. At what cost? And this is the point going back to earlier on when you said that economic growth always has a cost to it, and some lobby groups seem to think it just comes from fresh air. It doesn't. It relies on things like water, like energy. And if we're relying on non-renewable forms of energy and we're relying on clean water, that comes at an economic cost to us. And the population is bearing the brunt of this. Certain companies take the profit, but the population pays the price. And then the broader world pays the price. Like, the natural world is being decimated by humans. So, like, what humans have in common is that we share this wonderful planet, but we also cause all of these problems. And I think that really is a signifier that we're not as intelligent as we think we are.
You often hear the saying, live for today and enjoy the moment. And that's very true in the human existence. But we also got to think about our children, their children and their children's children, who will inherit this planet from us. And I'd say in generations to come, they'll damn us, you know, as the people who lived at this time.
I mean, I think there's two parts to that. I think that, you know, I'm all for people living life to the best that they can. But many of the things that's based on economic growth doesn't bring us happiness anyway. So not only is it damaging in the long run, but we see even from a mental health perspective, many of the patterns of behaviour that we're engaged in do us damage in the moment. Many people are going around at the moment very unhappy, anxious, depressed, and that's partially due to the way that we're living our lives. Of course, there are lots of other reasons as well as that, but there are lifestyle parts to this that we need to really check in on. And what about future generations? Well, I would say that you've got a really good point, that children and generations to come will look back at this generation and really think, what were they doing? But not only that, children in other parts of this world at this moment don't live like children in Ireland. I mean, we look to Gaza and 14,500 children are dead, you know, in the last couple of months. That's just barbaric. We look to other parts of the world where there's no food. So we look to Sudan at the moment and there's a huge famine. And yet at the same time, so much food in Ireland is being dumped. So it's not just a case of an incongruence between timelines, between now and the future. Yes. It's also an incongruence between here we are in one part of the world and yet there's other parts of the world that just seemed to be forgotten.
Nobody should go hungry on this planet. There's loads to go around.
There is no need for anyone on this planet to go hungry. Like, the Mechanical Institute of Engineers looked at this a couple of years ago and came up with a wonderful stat. Around 48% of food, all food, goes to waste. 48% of all food goes to landfill or some form of waste. And yet at the same time, we've got lots of people hungry. That's not a, it's not a problem of a lack of food. It's food distribution. The world does not need more food. We need less food, better distributed.
Now, what have you for us? You want to puzzle me on this Earth Day on Late Lunch. Puzzle the listeners, do you as well?
Absolutely. A colleague of mine, Fiacra, you know, he's got a background in marine biology, and that's a hint to your listeners. But, Jerry, here's a question for you. What has 3 hearts, 9 brains and blue blood? And I'll throw that out to your listeners as well. There's no prize, unfortunately. But what has 3 hearts, 9 brains and blue blood?
Does anybody out there know? Because I'm foxed for sure. I haven't a clue. But marine, it has to be a creature that lives in the deeps. An octopus? No, can I have a guess? No?
Absolutely spot on, Jerry.
Is
spot
it?
On.
I'm going to do the lotto.
Can I just say
that was a pure guess.
I was just going to say, can I say to your listeners, Jerry did not hear that answer from me in advance.
Genuinely, I didn't even know what he was going to blimmin' ask. That was a total shot in the an octopus.
And again, I think it's like a little, you know, a glimpse into the realm of the unknown. There's so much richness and just that's valuable in things that we don't see every day, and yet they suffer maybe because of our behaviours. And I think that's a real shame.
It really is a shame. Back to the day itself, World Earth Day. As you say, it's going since 1970. It has been marked all over the world today and people are doing different things. Can it make any impact? Is it important to celebrate every year? Will it make any change anywhere?
I think it will if we kind of take the clarion call and develop that action into, you know, something that we do every day into our patterns. You know, I think that when you look at young people, there are so many inspirational people, both in Drogheda, around Ireland, around the world. I think that you look at people who've gone before us, so many inspiring people. I think we really need to look at what we're doing and ask ourselves, why are we doing this? And that question around economic growth and that question around the kind of model that we have of development, we really need to question. And in Ireland, I mean, we live as if there's multiple planets. There's not. There's only one. And, you know, why not? Like, cherish it. Let's not ruin it. Let not that be our legacy, to really just cherish this wonderful planet that we call home. And we can do that, and we can do it much better. We can do it by beginning locally. And as I said, you know, earlier on, the River Boyne is a beautiful place to start, or maybe planting trees, or maybe just revisiting even cycling far more instead of taking the car. These are simple things that we can do.
You're hopeful. You have to be sure. You're a man that's been in this business all your life and you've visited so many parts of the world and you can speak from experience of the inequity you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I'm hopeful is that all of these things are man or woman made. They're not, none of them are natural. All of these things have been caused by us. So if we cause them, we can be the solution too. Why not?
Yeah, and we can do this, that and the other in the world. Why can't we solve the problems we have here? And don't get me started on going to Mars and going to the moon. Can we not look after this little globe that we all inhabit here first and get that right? Bobby, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm chuffed I got the octopus. It started my week on a high, to be honest with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today and happy Earth Day to everybody. And I wish you really all the best with everything you do. Bobby McCormick, CEO of the Development Perspective. Thanks for popping in.
Cheers, Jerry.
Thank you, Eric. Yes, plant evergreens, Jerry. If you're doing trees, Eric's been on to us from Dundalk. They give shelter to animals and other creatures all year round and beauty to the countryside. Thank you, Eric. Lovely to hear from you today on the show. 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text. Louise, I think we'll give the competition a spin. We have lovely prize each day this week, haven't we, Louise?
Yeah.
And it's for somewhere near your home patch. It is Navan Racecourse. That's your neck of the woods, isn't it? That is Louise's neck of the woods.
Great place
sure.
to go.
It is a great place. And they have a big, big meeting coming up this weekend. Yes, the champion jockey Colin Keane, the racing post David Jennings, at the races Kevin Blake, are holding an exclusive preview panel in the Boyne Suite when, before racing this Saturday, the 27th of April. It's a wonderful flat card featuring the SBK Vintage Crop Stakes and six other feature races to begin the flat campaign at Navan. And each day this week, we have a lovely racing bundle to give away. So what we have today is admission for two people to Super Saturday at Navan Races, a race card, a food voucher redeemable in the Kilberry restaurant, a €5 tote bet, and a drinks voucher. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice for two
lovely
people to give away? So Louise, would you give that little thingy you have there on that PC beside your spin? So listen, I want you to have a listen to this, and what I'm looking for is the name of this legendary racing commentator. Here we go.
And this is it, with Arkell just taking the lead as they come to the last fence. It's going to be Arkell if he jumps it. Arkell coming to the last now, and Arkell a length clear of Milhouse. He's over and clear. Milhouse is trying to challenge him again, but it's Arkell on the stand side. Milhouse over on the far side, coming up towards the line, and Arkell is holding him. Arkell going away now from Milhouse. This is the champion. This is the best we've seen for a long time. Arkell is the winner of the World Cup.
So who is that legendary racing commentator? Probably the greatest of all time. Answers to 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text, and you can win that lovely bundle, that brilliant bundle to Navan Racecourse for the big flat racing day this Saturday, the 27th of April. 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text. Well, Louise, the weather.
I'm
the
a new
weather.
Woman.
Yeah, you know what? We were talking this morning. I could see the smile in our face from ear to ear. Wasn't it lovely the weekend?
Ah,
it was just lovely. Really, thank God for it. The first weekend, good weekend of the year, to be honest with you. And you know, people were out and about, pepping everyone's step. The good weather. It really
just your
lifts,
lawnmowers.
Doesn't it? Ah, listen, lifts all boats. You could get out instead of running the lawnmower in a mud bath. You were actually running on the garden. I sprayed me moss in the front garden. I had to give the Earl Moss a little spray. Oh, what a job it did. And now an organic spray. Yes, within 24 hours. It worked the oracle, and I'm very pleased I got that done. I've been waiting to do it, and I got loads of work done in the garden the weekend. You took it easy yourself, did you? You had a nice weekend.
I did. I had a lovely weekend. Well, Saturday was, you know, here, there, and flying everywhere, bringing kids to matches. Jobs.
She's never off the road, this woman. You know, like, you know what?
Hasn't improved me driving.
Listen, don't be knocking yourself.
I always get there a half an hour early, tiny match to get parking.
Well, you know what? You're
I'm
great.
Always early.
Yeah, listen, that's the way to be. That's a good habit to form. Anyway, you're at Late Lunch on LMFM Radio, heading up to Top of the Hour now with Dermot Kennedy. And I was right all week last week. Better days. You had them the weekend. I won't mention later this week.
Away
we
go. Though.
It took a little while. It does. Chatting to Bobby McCormick, top of the show on World Earth Day. And just to remind you, before Late Lunch on Tuesdays, you can always tune in to Ours to Protect, and it's available on our website, and it's repeated here on LMFM Radio again on Friday afternoons. Ties in with the whole concept of Earth Day. And on the racing front, just to let you know, Belluestown's rescheduled race meeting takes place on the hill this Wednesday. The first race is at 4:45 and the final race at 8:14. For tickets and more information, check out belluestownraces.ie, and children are admitted free to the rescheduled meeting this Wednesday, starting 4:45. Now, my next guest on the show is a young man who's achieved way beyond expectations. He's just about to finish his degree course in zoology, and he's going on from here to do a master's in wildlife and conservation management. And he's going to tell me, beyond that, he hopes to do a PhD. Tristan Lennon, welcome to Late Lunch.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Not at all. You're very welcome to the show. Well, congratulations on your degree course. Why zoology, Tristan?
So in terms of my decision to do zoology, so I finished school. I finished second school, I think it was 2019. I didn't get enough points to go into university. I'd intended to go into science in UCD. That was one of my first choices, but the points were very high that year, I think 510. And I got 352. So I didn't have enough points, and so I decided to do a PLC course, which is a post-leaving cert course. Now, I had intended to do this course anyway, but after getting the points, it was kind of mandatory, so I went, I did that. I got a perfect result, 10 out of 10 distinctions, and so I got accepted to science in UCD.
Congratulations. Go ahead.
So I started there in autumn 2020, and then I was studying general science the first year, and then in my second year, I had to kind of start selecting things. Now, I initially thought I'd study genetics. However, halfway through my second year, I found it really wasn't for me. And so I reprioritized it onto zoology, which were classes I was really enjoying at the time, because I had taken a few classes in stuff like animal behavior, and I really enjoyed them. So I thought, well, I like animals, and I've always liked animals, and now I'm finding it's actually a viable thing to study. So I decided to focus on zoology at that point, and my interest has only grown since then.
Terrific. And a trip to Spain in your third year, where you went to study birds and ornithology, that was an influence as well, was it?
Yes. So in the third year of UCD, we had one of our modules called, I actually can't remember the name of the module now, but I think that, but one of the things that required was there was a trip that a week during the Easter break to a region called Bologna in the south of Spain, doing wildlife research, and so like learning research techniques. And so I thought that'd be a fun trip. I decided I'd go for this module, and I did. And while I was there, one of the things we were doing, so one of the research things we were learning about was what are called bird counts, which is one of the ways we sample bird populations. And so it was walking along a line. We were spotting every bird we could see along this line in a given time frame, or we'd stop and spend 10 minutes and just count every sighting of a bird within those 10 minutes. And as we were doing this, I found I really enjoyed it. Mm. Trying to look, especially for me, looking out for new species, things I hadn't seen before. And I just really enjoyed it, especially with the binoculars. And so I did a project on that trip related to birds with bird counts, and I really enjoyed it. And so when I came back, and I had so much enjoyment doing the bird counts and learning about birds and doing the bird watching, I got really into it. So I came back, I bought a pair of binoculars, and I started doing a lot more bird watching. And it just, that's really where it started. To think, was that it was just over a year ago now when I first developed an interest in birds. And like my friends even say to me, like, that's bizarre. I think there was a time before you were obsessed with birds. So.
It's a great, great story. And the thing is, here's what underpins all this story. And I know your mum, Carol, very, very well. And you live with autism, and you understand, living with this brings its challenges at times. How do you cope at times if you feel you're a little overloaded, perhaps?
Yeah. So the thing is, we're coping with autism. It's something, having autism means it's always present. And so learning coping techniques is really necessary if you want to participate in things and be able to be accepted amongst them and be able to do the things you want to do. You have to be able to self-regulate. And so most of the time, it's really hard to describe for me because it's so second nature to me that I wouldn't even recognize what I'm doing. Mm. It's just so normal for me. Now, there are times specifically when it's very rare now, but occasionally there are times when I do get overwhelmed and it's just way too much. So it's happened. The last time I can remember it happening would have been, I did a trip with my college as well, started my fourth year to Costa Rica for 2 weeks. And there was one of the days we were out doing a walk through the rainforest. And so one of the things that I've learned about how I can react to things is that it's a lot based on how tired I am. When I'm fresh and awake and I'm energized and everything, it's very easy to keep control. Mm. But when I start getting tired and exhausted and I'm just out of energy, it becomes a lot harder to control. And so on a particular day, we'd been doing a walk through the forest. I was very tired. The humidity was very high. It was very hot. We'd been walking for a long time. And it's just a long day. And so I went to break something that was in front of me, and the first one broke, and then, as I was pushing through a bunch of branches, the first one broke, and the second one didn't, and at that moment, I just lost it. And so what it feels like is suddenly, it's like a sudden rush, at least in that moment, it was like a sudden rush of energy that just couldn't be contained. Mm. And so I tried, I nearly lost it. And then when I came back, even for a moment, when I realised what I was doing, it's almost like it's just everything too much. And so what I do is I sat down and I cover my ears, not with a full palm because I find that not as effective and it's not how I like to do it. I use usually my thumbs or my index finger, press in my ear, so I can't hear anymore. I close my eyes and I just sit there and I try to calm myself down. I know that's very extreme. That's very rare for that to occur. But it's how it works. And it, depending on the severity of the situation, it might take 5 minutes or it might take 10 minutes for me to relax myself, come back to focus and calm down. But it happens, and getting control of it, luckily, as I've gotten older and as I've gotten better at managing things, it happens less and less.
Mm.
But the thing is, when it's happening, it's not like something truly awful is happening to me. I know what's happening and I know how to control it.
Yes.
And so the given time, I can come back to it and I can do it myself, because it's necessary that I be able to...
Terrific.
Trying to interact with things, that I won't always have the supports there, so I have to be able to support myself.
That is terrific that you are so self-aware and you can manage the situation. You've said that, you know, you've excelled, Tristan, at third level now in university with your studies, and you're even going on further now. But I see what you said, that college, you found third level college a much better experience than secondary school. Why?
All right, so... When I was in secondary school, so I went to my local school, and I had been there. As I went in, I did first through third year. I didn't do TOI, and I did fifth and sixth year. And what I find is that, especially when you're in a small area, everyone knows everyone, and everyone's been to school together. Everyone knew who everyone was. And so what that meant is that when I was younger, I was less able to manage my other difficulties. And so... that left bad impressions of some people and some wariness. And people just remember, like, told stories or remembered what happened. And that meant there was a lot of, people, like, knew every, like, you're not always happy about all the moments of your life. And unfortunately, when you're in a small area and you go to the local school, everyone knows about them all.
Mm.
And so that can be very difficult. And so especially as well, is that making friends is very hard, because when you have interests, like myself, that aren't the norm for everyone. Now, my interests aren't far and away weird. They just weren't what most people in my area liked, and that's fine.
Yeah.
The problem is, though, is that when you're in a small area, you're a lot less likely to come across people who share your interests, and so it makes it a lot harder to make friends.
Mm.
And especially when you, even if you do find people who share your interests, sometimes they just, you just don't meld very well. And then there's the issue of that being in school... in these areas, there's also when people see someone who's different or someone who behaves differently and doesn't share their interests, they're a lot more likely to other that person and pick on them. And so I faced those issues a lot. People, it never got physical. I was socially bullied, but I was never physically bullied because, unfortunately for that, the tendency I had before was to aggression when I was younger, and I remained bigger than most people, and so people didn't feel safe trying to threaten me. But they did bully me, and I was teased a lot. But then when I got to college, the benefit of college, I attend UCD, which has thousands of students all different ages, and especially at that point, people have developed more of themselves, so they feel less in need. When you're more confident in yourself, you don't need to attack other people.
Mm.
Was it reconfirm who you are? So at college level, people have gotten a better sense of themselves, and so there's not as much tendency to that. You don't have to interact with the people who you don't get along with. There's thousands of people. If you don't get along, you just don't talk to those people. Mm. And it's a lot easier than when you're in a school, in secondary school. And in terms of making friends, there's so many more people.
Yes.
So the odds that you'll come across someone who shares your interests and whose personality meshes well with yours is much higher. And so it's a lot easier to find your crowd in a university where there's loads of people. And then with the education stuff, you're always doing stuff that's close enough to what you want. You don't feel like you're just like in secondary school where you're doing all these classes and there's a tight supervision. In college, it's all on you, and so sometimes you don't have to go with the quick. You're not very contained on what you have to do.
Yes.
If you decide you're leaving at any point, no one can stop you.
Yeah.
And it's up to you. So I find college a lot better, at least for me.
Yes.
Maybe it's not better for some people, but for the way I learn and the way I interact socially, it's much better.
Ah, simply brilliant. You describe it brilliantly, I have to say. Just before we finish, you've been accepted onto the Masters in Wildlife and Conservation Management at UCD. And you say you'd hope to do a PhD, really a doctorate beyond that, yes?
Yeah. So the situation was that I've really enjoyed education. And I think academics is really where I excel. I've always done good at my work, never quite good at exams, but my assignment work and my writing has always been quite good. So I decided to apply to do a master's course in wildlife conservation and management. Now, the issue is with a lot of this stuff is that finances can be very hard. Mm. I think this course is going to cost, I won't qualify for the SUSE grant anymore for that because they have a lower threshold for master's. And it's going to be about $10,000 for the year. And I am exceedingly lucky that I am with the family that I am, because I have some of my family members are willing to make those sacrifices in the short term so I can do this course. Wow. If I wasn't, brilliant. Well, unfortunately, I'd be excluded. Hmm. And now so I am set. I will be able to do my master's and I will be able to fully pay for it. And while it has been mentioned, so I do want to do a PhD. I would love to get my PhD and be able to stick doctor in front of my name. A lot for the, because I do think I'm capable of it and I always want to reach the potential that I have. Partially just because I want to be able to look at my siblings and say, I'm a doctor and they're not. So there's a little bit of selfishness there. But the issue I found recently with the PhD is getting funding for it.
Yes.
So to do a PhD, it requires a lot of money. And there's a way to get funding in Ireland, which is through the IRC. Mm. Now, I've recently found out how applying for that works. And my confidence in my ability to get that funding has diminished because it's very competitive. You have to do really well. And there's all these sort of barriers. And so even though I really want to, and I think I'd be capable of it, there's just so many other people who also really want to and are really capable of it. And so I am going to try, but getting that funding and being able to do my PhD isn't as much of a certainty as I thought. So where the plan was originally do a master's and immediately go into a PhD, It might have to be do a master's and take a year or two while I'm applying for funding and yes. hope I get it.
You know what? You know what I'm going to say to you? Just keep that in focus and that in mind as well. And you know what I'm going to tell you, Tristan Lennon? What you've achieved so far is simply remarkable. And you know what I believe? You'll do whatever you want to do in this life. And you will achieve that in the long term. I know you will, because you're marvellous. And you did mention your wonderful family, your mum, Carol, all of your family who support you to the hilt. And they're such a big part in what you do. But you know what? You've defied the naysayers. They said that you would never go on in education. You now have your degree. You sign up for your master's. And who knows what happens beyond that. I admire you so much, Tristan Lennon. And thank you for joining me on the show today.
Of course. Thank you. And I appreciate the compliment. Thank you.
Absolutely. You have it from me by the spadeful, young man. Thanks for joining me on the show, Tristan.
Thanks. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye. Isn't he just marvellous, that young fella? His mum was told at junior cert he could never go on in education. Look what he's achieved. Inspirational. That's Tristan Lennon. Stay with us on Late Lunch. James Bay and Let It Go on your Late Lunch this Monday afternoon. Now, Louise, I'm back to sport with you. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you listening carefully?
Mm.
Football, soccer. Across the water, England, FA Cup semi-finals the weekend, Man City beat Chelsea, right there
expected.
In the final at Wembley, and the other semi-final was Manchester United against Coventry.
Ooh.
Coventry are in the Championship, they're not in the top league, right, and they've been through torrid times in recent years, but anyway, Wembley yesterday, second semi-final, United led 3-0, match over into the second half.
You would have thought.
You would have. 3-3 at full time, draw match, into extra time. United hit the woodwork. Coventry hit the bar near the end to win, but scored a goal in the very last minute of extra time. Wembley went ballistic. Man United fans left the ground. VAR had a look at it. I hate VAR after yesterday.
Why?
I think the width of his toenail was offside the Coventry player. And the goal was disallowed. Went to penalties and United missed the first penalty. The Riley theory.
And you said, yeah.
The team that misses first wins. United won the penalty shootout. Coventry missed two terrible penalties. And Manchester United go to the final. They play Man City, the same final as last year. 2 years in a row, the two Manchesters have got to the final. Anyway, they'll be thrashed in the final by City. I have a saying for it. Yesterday, United were almost sent to Coventry. You like it?
Love
they
it.
Were almost, and they should have been sent to Coventry. They were at Manchester United. Oh, my
God.
Weren't
at the races.
It was so... It's one of those moments. You would have loved for Coventry to win it. You know what I mean? The underdog. Now, in the final, they probably hadn't a chance. They wouldn't have a chance against City. But to beat United the way they did...
To get there.
Yeah, to come back from three down, hit the woodwork, have the goal. It was a fraction. I hate VAR after yesterday. And I'm not anti-United or anything like that, to be honest with you. But I would love to see the underdog win. Mm. But poor Coventry. My heart goes out to them today. It really, really does. Anyway, the lovely weather we've been talking about. It. Beautiful the weekend. Looks good, doesn't it? With Nuala Kerry for the week ahead. Not bad. Not bad for the week ahead. Anyway, it's great for all of us. But if you do suffer from hay fever... It is a problem. And we're going to talk about it next because she's in the house with me. Delighted to have her with us again. Pharmacist Cathy Morris here in a moment. Yes, the good weather is fantastic. But for people who live with hay fever, it is no joke. Cathy Maher, our favourite pharmacist, is in the house with me today. Welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Great to see you in person, Jerry. You haven't changed a bit.
Well, I shave every day and I know I've changed, but I'm going to fire that back at you. You haven't changed a bit for sure. Anyway, it's great to have you with us on the show once more. Tell us about work the weekend. Has the hay fever people arrived in numbers with the good weather?
It has. And I suppose you and I have had this conversation for a number of years. And I typically would always say, St. Patrick's Day. That's my start of the hay fever season. And a lot of trees would begin pollinating in March. So, but at the minute, so we'll have our birch, our ash, our oak tree, they all start pollinating, really peaking now at the minute. But you know, we've had such miserable weather that people with hay fever really got a bit of a late start.
Yes.
But certainly in the pharmacy on Saturday, I saw so many people that were just really debilitated. And I suppose for those of us that don't suffer from hay fever, we can't underestimate how distressing it can be for people with hay fever, young and old, and those even with eczema and asthma. They're all intrinsically linked. So Saturday definitely was a big eye-opener for a lot of people, and we had to go, right, how do we tackle the acute situation and how do we look forward to the summer?
I often ask you this, and I just want to remind people again, it's a big question. Can I develop hay fever at any stage of my life? If I have hay fever, does it ever leave somebody that they get a break from it at some stage of their life? Those questions.
What we would say, and obviously out in Duleek, we're a rural area and we would have a lot of people that would move out to Duleek, and I would often see people that have never had hay fever, and when they move to a different area, so whether it's out to rural, out into the country, or move from country to town, when you're maybe exposed to other pollens, maybe different trees, different grasses, people can develop hay fever at any point. Allergies generally are rising, so and there's no evidence as to why that's happening, but hay fever is an allergy to pollen and you can develop it at any point. You're more likely to develop it if a family member has one of those three atopic conditions, so whether a family member, first degree relative, has hay fever, asthma or eczema. And if a family member has any one of those, you're 33, you're third more likely to develop one or other or all of the conditions.
Does it ever leave you? Have you ever seen cases where people have it and it goes away with time in their lives?
It doesn't go away with time. Oh. Really what it is, it's management of symptoms. It's trying to see what best fits. And one question I'm asked this time every year, is there anything new? Is there anything revolutionary? Is there anything different? There's not one treatment that suits all. There's a lot that people can do to help themselves. There's a range of treatments. Sometimes people might find one particular treatment works for them. Others might need three or four different preparations to get them through that season.
Let's talk about things you can do, and then we'll come on to the preparations and you dealing with people in the pharmacy. So it's hay fever season. It is April now. It's going to run until September, into October, if the weather stays good. What can you do in a practical sense? Talk to me about some of the things without a medication.
Absolutely. Well, as you hit it there, Jerry, it's pollen. Pollen is not just from grass and flowers, but pollen comes from trees, from weeds, from anything that grows in our garden. And the weekend just passed just meant everything had a burst of energy. At the minute, as I say, trees that are pollinating would be ash, birch, oak. So they're beginning to pollinate and people are sensitive to those. Grasses now are starting to kick in late April, early May, and then the grasses begin to pollinate, as will weeds and nettles. Nettles are a very high producer of pollen as well. So when we think of that, what hay fever actually is when the body has an allergic reaction to pollen, and that promotes then the body to release histamine and then all the symptoms happen. when you imagine the like of yesterday, when the sun began to break through around 8 or 9 in the morning, the day began to warm up, pollen rises from the ground, from the grasses, from the trees, and rises up into the atmosphere. So that's the first contact that the pollen makes in touch with the body. So it lands on your eyelashes, it lands on your face, it lands in your nostrils, into the mouth, and that provokes symptoms. It happens again when the evening cools down, so around 3 or 4, as the evening sun begins, as the temperature begins to drop, and the pollen drops back down from the atmosphere, back down onto the skin, eyelashes, nose, all
of those. Two doses a day.
So I spent a lot of my day on Saturday reminding people to shower, maybe after the pollen has risen up in the morning, to shower a little bit later in the day, and to shower or wash the face, particularly young kids. I get the kids in, get a face cloth, wash them down, get, you know, make sure the pollen is off the body, because when the pollen is in contact with the body, that's going to promote the symptoms. Symptoms would be, you know, streaming eyes, and I'd very often be asked, is it a cold or is it a hay fever, particularly in those people that have never had it before. But streaming eyes, sneezing quite a lot, runny nose, blocked nose, itchy throat, even sometimes maybe an itchy palate. You know, the roof of your mouth can be itchy. Scratchy ears, itchy ears, itchy scalp, headache. Because if you imagine everything is inflamed, and that can really promote, if the sinuses are inflamed, that can bring on a headache. And just generally feeling rotten.
Miserable.
Feeling rotten. Mm. And, you know, we're coming into exam season, and we see an awful lot of parents coming in now with junior leaving cert kids who are maybe really, really distressed with it. So we have to manage it as best we can. Things that people can do themselves, wash. Definitely wash the pollen
off the skin. So
the shower,
yeah.
There's the old fashioned, and it sounds a little bit silly, and I did, there was a young chap in with me on Saturday, and I was telling him to put the Vaseline inside the nose, and he was going home to do that. The Vaseline, it acts as a pollen filter, so the pollen just doesn't get into the contact with the mucosal surfaces inside the nostrils. So Vaseline inside the nostrils, just to stop the pollen.
It works.
It does actually work, and on the eyelashes. For women, it gives you lovely eyelashes, but it actually acts as a little filter, so the pollen doesn't get into the eyes, and that streaming, watery, really inflamed eyes can help prevent. Nothing's perfect, but it all helps. Things like wraparound sunglasses, really, really important, because normal sunglasses are fine, but if you have the wraparound ones that come either side of the face, again, it's all to prevent the pollen landing. Men, don't cut the grass. If you've had hay fever sufferer, you're going to have to outsource that job, or wear a filtered mask, you know, the KN95, wear a filtered mask, but ideally don't do it. Even things like, you know, my washing line was certainly full all over the weekend, but if the clothes are out and the pollen is rising up and the pollen is coming down, the pollen is also landing on the clothes. So if there's someone who particularly suffers very badly with hay fever, I would suggest hanging the clothes outside. I would dry the clothes inside if you can.
Use the dryer.
It's well, there's a whole climate issue there, Jerry. Clothes horse.
We have a free electricity day on Sundays with the deal we have. So it's not a bad day. But I know what you're saying. People love to get the clothes out into the light and the air and everything.
Yeah, so it's all of that. Keeping the windows closed, driving. Some cars will have a pollen filter, but driving with the windows closed, you know, circulate the air within the car. Try and keep the outside air coming in, and it's that kind of thing. And then when you come back in, return into the house after school or work of the day, give the face a wash, shower if you can, to try and get rid of the pollen.
If you like walking and outdoors, are you better than going real early morning before this starts and late evening when it's over? You know,
yes,
somebody,
if possible.
Yeah,
absolutely. And do all of the things that we listed, the glasses, the Vaseline, all of those things. I would be great. And we were so lucky in Louthamead to live near the sea. And saline is tremendous to actually clean out the nasal passages. So if someone has a nasal spray at home, like a saline to wash out, I would say an awful lot of people get great relief from sea swimming, from just getting in and getting that saline, the salty water to clean out the nasal passages.
So there's loads of things in a practical sense you can do there. Now, I'm still in distress and I need to call into Haven Pharmacy in Drilleague to see somebody, or your local pharmacy, wherever that is. What can you do for me?
First and foremost, I check who's it for. Is it for yourself or is it for an adult? And I such a range on Saturday. It was adults right through to the elderly, from very young children right through to very elderly. Really suffered on Saturday. It was just the first beautiful day that we've had. So I check in. What have you got? What are your symptoms? Do we need to go for an antihistamine, which will give instant relief? And that antihistamine, I usually recommend starting in late March, early April. It's not too late. If hay fever is only kicking in now, start now and take it every day up until the end of hay fever season, which is certainly mid-September, early October. It's absolutely safe, absolutely fine. There are very few antihistamines. that interact with other medicines?
Mm.
So that's the second question I ask. I check if anyone else has taken any other medicines. And the antihistamine will give your systemic. So it goes into the bloodstream. It's trying to fight the histamine release from within inside the body. Other symptoms like the watery eyes, the runny nose, I may need to treat those topically. So I might need to use an antihistamine eye drop for someone to try and treat the eye symptoms, or then we may need to go for a steroid nasal spray. So we talk through what are the worst symptoms, when do we need the treatment for, do we want it to kick in straight away, or are we happy to go with a couple of days before it begins to work? The steroid nasal sprays are really, really effective. They dampen down any inflammation. So if you think, Jerry, if you've ever had a bad chest infection, you've been given steroids, or if you've had a bad
Will you
back.
Stop? Don't even bring me back there. I'm not going to go there. I know what you're talking about. Yes.
They really, for anyone, any of your listeners that have had steroids, they reduce inflammation.
Yeah.
Hay fever is inflammation of the immune response, so it reduces that inflammation. Steroid nasal sprays are really effective. They work on the nasal symptoms, but because they dampen the inflammation, they also have a good effect on all symptoms as well, even the eyes and the systemic ones. But they do take 3 or 4 days to work. So anyone on Saturday, I was saying, this is not going to work today. By Tuesday, Wednesday, you might find a bit of benefit and continue right through. It's really important with the steroid nasal sprays that they're used right through until the end of the season. Unfortunately, with those, I can't sell them across the counter for anyone under the age of 18. They need to be prescribed by a GP. But once they're prescribed, the GPs will normally have repeat and we can go through for the summer season.
And 12-month prescriptions.
That's a whole other one. Yeah, I'm really excited about that one.
Another issue altogether that you don't have to be going back. But, you know, for people, and thank God and touch wood, I think I'll touch my head here. It's the best place. I haven't, you know, had to deal with this, but I do know people who have. And it's, you can't overemphasise the misery that it causes people.
And then we have to remember as well, with other medicines or with whatever people are going to be doing in the day, some antihistamines will cause drowsiness. And even the ones that say non-drowsy, even the ones that are classed as non-drowsy, about 1 in 10 will be susceptible to a little bit of drowsiness. So we always have to caution for anyone that's going to be driving, operating machinery, not lawnmowers, or even doing exams. You know, we just have to be careful with what people are doing. So we take all of that into account before we decide what's the best treatment for someone. And then in conjunction with the self-help stuff that they need to do, we try and get people through the hay fever season as best as possible.
If you're living with somebody who lives with this and you don't have it yourself, that's an issue, isn't it, within a house? You know, all we've talked about there, the showering, the changing your clothes, all that type of thing. It takes managing as well to help somebody who has it. If there's only one individual within, let's say, a family unit.
It takes a joint effort, because even down to things like vacuuming regularly, because those with hay fever will have their immune system, their rhinitis will all be inflamed, dust mite, all of that will help just trigger and trigger further. So vacuum regularly, dust regularly, but a really good tip would be to dust with a damp cloth if possible, because you remember, Jerry, anytime you're dusting your furniture, I know you go off with your yellow.
Oh, I do it once a week.
Your feather duster.
Did I ever do it in my life? No, go ahead there. Don't keep talking.
But that gets the dust mite into the air, triggers again. Yeah, yeah. So damp cloth, everything that we can do to try and dampen that for people, makes it as best as possible.
Yeah, because that's the thing. You have to, you know, think about these things when you're under the one roof with somebody who lives with it. In your experience, is this on the increase, hay fever? Or is it just sort of at a steady level? From your experience working in this area,
it feels like it is, and certainly all
going up,
all
increasing.
Allergic conditions seem to be. You know, we're hearing more cases of food allergies. We're hearing more cases of lots of allergies. Reason why, we're not sure. There's some theories that we're living in such a clean or sterile environment. We're not sure. But certainly allergies are increasing. But allergies can be really serious. Whether it's a food allergy or even hay fever, if someone has asthma and hay fever makes asthma symptoms even more difficult to control, and that can be really quite severe. So we really have to take it seriously. We have to help those that suffer with it. So we have to all educate ourselves in order to help those that suffer with it.
A question from a listener there. Can you get an allergy from cutting timber? Or, you know, is hay fever... Well, when you mention trees and you know, pollen and that, if you deal with anything in that area, I presume you can.
You can have an allergy, but also the particles that are in the air. I was at a COPD event just recently, a COPD patient event, and I learned something at that. Actually, pulling ivy and pulling some of those things away from hedges actually releases spore that can trigger a reaction in lots of people, not just hay fever sufferers or COPD patients. So just be careful in the garden. If you are going to be doing anything like that where there's airborne particles, it can produce certainly sensitivity. Maybe it won't trigger hay fever, but it could cause breathing difficulties. So wearing a mask would always be ideal.
There you are. And we're finished with masks, with COVID, etc. Just one little thing. I see there's a COVID vaccination being offered soon to vulnerable, very vulnerable people as well. It's just come in there. Will that be extended or is that it just for those?
We're waiting on guidance from the HSE and NIAC, so the National Immunisation Advisory Council. That will come through. I suppose COVID, as we've progressed through the years, is now going to be a seasonal vaccine, and we'd anticipate it would be May and autumn. So usually spring and autumn, and that would be for the vulnerable and those at risk, and then that will be extended out. So people are now know where they are with their vaccination schedule. So if you're in that cohort, the HSE will contact you and then you'll be able to avail of it wherever you get your vaccines.
Sorry, that's just an aside. While you were with us today, take the opportunity to ask you about that. Anyway, the message is those things and tips and stuff we can do in our home and around our gardens, etc., are very important to help. But go to your pharmacist if you are suffering the effects. That's
don't
the message.
Don't suffer in
today.
Silence. Go in and get treatment. The treatments are very safe and very effective.
Cathy Marr from Haven Pharmacy, great to have you in studio with us. See you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Beyonce and Texas Hold'em. Yes, she's broken into a whole new genre in the country and Monaghan music field. Oh, did I say Monaghan? Country and Western, I meant field there with her new song. You're at Late Lunch and LMFM Radio. Delighted for Mary O'Kane, Louise. Mary O'Kane was with us on Late Lunch last week when
straight
we were out
there
and about in Navan. Number one in the bestsellers chart this week with her book Anxious Children. I ain't one bit surprised, Louise. That is a terrific, terrific book. It really is. Anxious Children in an Anxious World. And the thing about Mary is she independently published that book. You know what I mean? Which is even better still. It's number one in the Irish non-fiction chart. And I congratulate Mary. And I ain't one bit surprised. She's done really brilliantly with that book. And it's going to sell loads and loads of copies. She's a great woman. She really is. Oh, she's so interesting in the whole field of children. Wasn't I right about the return and the bottles? Conor Pope. I see Conor Pope writing today in the Irish Times about the difficulties with the return scheme.
I don't know why. I just can't get my head around why it was needed in the first place. We have a green bin.
Yes, it's well, they say that we're not recycling in numbers like we are expected to by the EU. That's why they brought it in.
Do you have to return them within 7 days? Or you don't get anything?
No.
I thought I read somewhere like that. And I was kind of going,
Come here. No, it's difficult enough. You know, from machines not working, as Connor was writing about. I told you I was left with some cans and bottles last week that the machines wouldn't accept. What do? You have to go back to your car with those. You know what I mean? And it's just a little cumbersome for me. I know and I understand the theory behind it. And it's all very good. But
why wouldn't accept them?
It just rejected them. You know,
why?
I don't know why.
Did
maybe
you pay 15 cent extra for them?
That's what I don't know, whether I had a bottle or two before the thing was brought in. I have cans that don't have the return on them. I'm just not sure.
Because I think, you know, I think, you know, if you have to pay 15 cent, it doesn't matter. You should get the money back.
Yes, and you know, I'm sure there's an awful lot going back, and they say that they reinvest the money into the scheme. That's what the quoted are saying today.
Fixing the machines.
I'm starting to rub off on you. Do you know that?
I'm starting to get cranky.
Yeah, I'm starting to rub off on you. I just got that there today. Late Lunch LMFM Radio after 2. Creative Spark Dundalk and a brand new artist of the week. Do it Late Lunch on LMFM Radio. And just reminding you again, there's a big, big race day at Navan Racecourse this Saturday, the 27th of April. Equality flat card featuring the SBK Vintage Crop Stakes and 6 other feature races to begin the flat campaign at Navan. Before the racing, I'll draw your attention to this. Champion jockey Colin Keane, the Racing Post David Jennings, at the races Kevin Blake will host an exclusive preview panel package in the Boyne Suite there on Saturday before racing. I wanted you to have a listen to this classic race commentator. Let's remind ourselves of who it is.
And this is it, with Arkell just taking the lead as they come to the last fence. It's going to be Arkell if he jumps it. Arkell coming to the last now, and Arkell a length clear of Milhouse. He's over and clear. Milhouse is trying to challenge him again, but it's Arkell on the stand side. Milhouse over on the far side, coming up towards the line, and Arkell is holding him. Arkell going away now from Milhouse. This is the champion. This is the best we've seen for a long time. Arkell is the winner of the World Cup.
Yes, the wonderful, the late great Peter O'Sullivan, probably the greatest racing commentator of all time. Thank you to everybody who was in touch with us. Mary Bennett, you're going along on Saturday. Yes, we have a race bundle to give away each day. Mary wins it today. She got the answer right. Admission card for two to Super Saturday at Navan. A race card, food voucher redeemable in the Kilberry restaurant. A €5 tote bet and drinks voucher. Well done to you, Mary. We'll be in touch to make the arrangements. I'll have another bundle to give away tomorrow afternoon on Late Lunch. Now let's give this a whirl.
The Late Lunch Artist of the Week.
Artist of the Week.
Well, it had to be this lady for me this week, with the movie Back to Black released recently. Yes, my Artist of the Week all this week is, of course, the wonderful, the late, great Amy Winehouse, born on the 14th of September 1983. She was only 27 when she passed away on the 23rd of July 2011. What a talent she was. What could she have done? What might she have done? We will never, ever know, will we? Because she just made such a mark in such a short space of time. Her album, that album, Back to Black, the movie of the same name in 2006, became a massive international success and one of the best-selling albums in UK history. Brit Awards she picked up, Novello Awards, Grammy Awards. This woman just swept the boards in her time. But unfortunately, she struggled with substance abuse, mental illness and addiction. And she actually died of alcohol poisoning in July 2011 at the age of 27. She's ranked 26th in the 100 greatest women in music of all time. And I ain't one bit surprised. So let's begin the week with Amy's version of the most brilliant song. Yes, it is her song. It's Amy Winehouse and Rehab.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. They tried to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
Amy Winehouse and Rehab, my artist of the week. More about Amy in words and song roundabout this time tomorrow afternoon. They're on the way, Jerry. They've appeared on Derek at the weekend. The little creatures of magic. The mayfly is up on Derek, they say. Won't be long till it's appearing everywhere else, says Liam. Thanks indeed for that, Liam. The underdog did win. Yes, I was talking about Coventry earlier on in the show, says Kevin. Yes, Jerry, the underdog did win yesterday. Liverpool beat Fulham. Boom, boom. Jim Dooley's been on. Jerry, the FA got what they wanted in all Manchester final. VAR is ruining our game, and they would have looked at anything that they could to disallow Coventry's goal. Remember that VAR is manned by referees who are mates with the officials on the park. That's a situation that will never work. I hate VAR, says Jimmy Dooley this afternoon. Well, I did yesterday, Jim, but he must have been, I think he was a fraction off, a toenail offside, but that's the way the cookie crumbles with the rules. Jerry, I don't know if you'd noticed, but the plastic and tin and the cans and bottles is getting thinner and thinner, easier to dent, and that's why the machines refuse them. It's all a catch penny, says a listener this afternoon. Thank you for your comments. Really do appreciate them. Creative spark in Dundalk. It's history and story is simply wonderful, but they've added a new string to the bow, and we are going to hear about it next. Since it began in 2012, listen to this, over 200 jobs have been created. Nearly 7,000 people have engaged in the training there, and it's estimated it has an annual local economic contribution of close on €4 million. It is some story. Well, they have another string to the bow now. Who am I talking about? Creative Spark in Dundalk, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by their executive director, Sarah Daly. Afternoon, Sarah.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. That is an impressive CV in anybody's book, may I say. Tell us about the new Fab Lab. Where does this fit in?
The new Fab Lab was launched last June, so it's brand new, lovely, shiny, clean place still, but not for long, probably. It came out of what we'd been doing before. So since 2012, we've had a fine art print studio here and a ceramic studio. So we've always had a sort of creative production spaces alongside the workspace units and the co-working and everything else that we have going on here. And it just digital fabrication and 3D printing, laser cutting, all of those types of things just seemed like the next logical step for us. So we held a symposium in 2015 actually looking at 3D printing and just were blown away by the possibilities and what we could do to support local businesses and local creative entrepreneurs if we could have access to that sort of equipment here. So we didn't just decide to make a small Fab Lab, though. We built a huge extension, which we completed last year. So we doubled the size of Creative Spark in 2023. So we have a really big, fantastic facility here now. And the bottom floor of the new extension is devoted to the Fab Lab and everything about digital fabrication.
It's a huge addition, and when you mention 3D, yeah, of course, it's an amazing development technology-wise. How many SMEs, are under your umbrella at this stage?
Well, based across our two locations, we have the downtown hub as well in Clanbrassil Street, which we opened in 2022. So we've been in expansion mode for the last couple of years. We have about 63 small businesses, and most of those are micro businesses, so one or two person businesses. And then we work with a lot of other companies that wouldn't necessarily be based in the facility, but they have access to the space. So within the print studio, we have 35 members. We work with a group of artists, Artist Exchange, which has over 40 members. We work with Loud Craftmark Designers Network. Again, it has about 50 members. And then since we've had the Fab Lab, we've started to work more with small engineering and manufacturing businesses locally, and lots of other creatives as well that are kind of itching to get their hands on the equipment and see what they can do by adding this new kind of set of tools to their skills.
It's a terrific achievement, may I say. Congratulations to you all, because those micro businesses, they're all building blocks, of course,
absolutely,
of employment and our economies and everything else. And you're at the cutting edge of things. That's the thing about this. What you provide there is access to the finest technology available anywhere in the world. How do people, like, for people listening today who may have, let's say, a micro business or an idea, or may look to have access to what you have there, how does that work?
It's on a membership basis, so you can join as a basic member, which is Faber One, and then that goes up to the enterprise level. So if you were a larger company and you wanted to bring your team in here, you can join as a company and your team can have access. So we really work with people to see what level they need. I suppose the easiest way of starting to get involved is maybe to undertake a class or a course with us. So we have a suite of different programs. You can check that on our website all the time. So everything from just learning the basics of 3D printing up to other types of technology and all of the software that goes alongside that as well, because you're designing within a 3D environment digitally, and then you're learning which machine you actually want to output that to. So while 3D printers sound like the future, we have lots of other equipment here as well, so laser cutters, CNC machine, and electronics benches, all sorts of things. So if you want to actually make a working prototype, we have all the equipment here to help you to do that.
And, you have meeting and training rooms there. As you mentioned, the downtown hub in central Dundalk there. What about the Artist in Residence program? Tell me about that for a moment, please.
Yeah, it's a really nice program that's been running since 2014, and I think we've had over 70 artists in residence over that time. And artists get to apply for either 2 months or 3 months. They get studio space, and then they get access to all of the facilities here. So if that's the print studio or the ceramic studio, and now the Fab Lab. So it's really a time for them to take a step outside their own studio, access equipment that maybe they wouldn't have themselves, but also just to concentrate fully on their practice for those couple of months, and hopefully be inspired by what they see here, because we always try to have at least one local, one national, and one international artist coming here, and we have 10 over the years, so they can be from all over the world. We've had people from Canada and the States. We have somebody coming from Australia later this year, so it's exciting that people see this as an opportunity to come to Dundalk and to Ireland and be inspired by the landscape and the people and the mythology and whatever else they might encounter when they're here. So it's a really nice program because they always try to get involved with the community, and we always ask them to do at least one community project while they're here. So that might be just giving a workshop or a demonstration, or sometimes people will go and lead it. You know, we last week we had a photo walk and talk with our current artist in residence, Julie Corcoran. So she brought people around the town. Luckily, it was a lovely sunny Friday afternoon, just out learning how to use your camera, how to take photos out on site. So just things like that are really a really nice part of the Artist in Residence program, that people get involved in the community when they're here.
Do people stay with you long term, or, you know, as people say, grow from micro to maybe slightly larger, they move through and that frees up space? I take it you have capacity. If there are people listening to us today, wonder, could I become involved there? Have you capacity to take new people, and is
we
that the way it works?
Capacity. Yeah?
Yeah,
there's always a bit of turnover, and I guess that's the whole point. We want to see people come here and scale and grow and move off and hopefully employ more people and grow out of us. They never fully leave us, so everybody always comes back, because we have plenty of meeting rooms and training space here if people want to come back with their team, or if they want to come back just to hold interviews here, whatever that might be. We have plenty of space for people to stay connected to us. But the idea is that people will grow and move on. So we have a couple of spaces actually available at the moment. So if people want to get in touch with us, hello@creativespark.ie is our email address, so they can drop us a line and we can send them on information about all of that.
When I saw the 3D printing for the first time myself, I couldn't believe it. It's hard to, you know, when you're reared with photocopiers and copiers, and then you see this thing produce what it can produce. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's really exciting to see something, you know, coming to life that you've maybe sketched out on paper to start with, and then you bring it into the 3D software and then see it actually coming out in real life. It's very exciting. And we have lots of different types of 3D printers as well, so not just the nylon ones, or not just the plastic ones that print nearly like an icing bag is what I say to people. It's like icing a cake, but we have other ones, resin ones and nylon ones as well, that have all different applications. So, a big suite of equipment here.
Well described, I have to say. You're fantastic, and I just wanted to have a wee chat with you today and highlight the wonderful work you've done, what you've contributed to the economy and the community there, and that you're moving forward all of the time, and it's there for people. creativespark.ie. Congratulations on the expansion, best wishes with the Fab Lab and all besides, and it's all good news from Creative Spark in Dundalk. Thank you for joining me, Sarah.
Thanks a lot, Jerry. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That's Sarah Daly there, Executive Director of a wonderful place of innovation and creativity in the heart of Dundalk, rounding off our late lunch this afternoon. Eddie Caffrey's on his way with The Drive. We're back with Tuesday's late lunch from 1:30. Enjoy the evening. See you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Cool.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.